Is everybody in? Is everybody in? Is everybody in? The ceremony is about to begin.
Home on a Wednesday at this time. We got a little bit extra Ben and Woods today. Going to take you right into the EcoWater SoCal pregame show with Sammy Levitt, the great Sammy Levitt, that sweet, sweet angel that he is. Can't wait to see him. He'll be here any minute, I'm sure.
I bet he's already here.
He's probably here somewhere.
Working on some stuff for the pregame show.
Guy's a legend, man. I am. My name is Stephen Woods. Go by Woodsy. And Paul Reindel's our executive producer. Goes by Paulie. Ben Higgins, your friendly neighborhood sports anchor. He goes by Ben.
I'd like to take a moment, just while we have it here, to start our third hour, to salute one of my television colleagues, Veronica.
Oh.
She is retiring. She is at that age. She's been in television forever. She's one of my favorite people at Channel 10. Has been there since I started, and I've been there 20 years, and she's been there much longer than I have. Usually works in the control room or out on the floor running the prompter for us. Just a terrific person, and she is heading into retirement. I was talking with her yesterday, and she said she had to go down for the first time to the Social Security office. And I realized I'm usually the person who kind of Ben-splains things, like how things work. I have no idea how Social Security works.
Same. Did you just get a check?
I don't know. I assumed kind of, yeah, you hit an age and then they send you a check, but I guess it's more complicated than that, and had that realization that, yeah, I've got fewer working days ahead of me than I have behind me. I mean, I've been working consistently, you know, for 27 years now, and, you know, probably less than that ahead of me. You know, we're 20, I think retirement age now is 67, so we're both less than 20 years away from the official retirement age. Now, you can keep working if you want, but you can start taking, I guess, your full Social Security now at like 67. Not that it'll even, some people always say, it won't even exist by the time you get there. I have no idea really how it works, but she said, oh, it's a nightmare. It's worse than the DMV.
Really?
Going down to the Social Security office.
I just got that to look forward to.
It also got me, you know, thinking, oh, Social Security. Social Security number, like it's like that number that you're assigned at birth,
right,
that you remember, and you're not supposed to share with anybody. How much do you have to trust someone to give them your Social Security number?
A lot,
right?
Yeah.
I gave Paulie my Social Security number yesterday.
You did?
Yeah.
I wrote it down.
It's time to rage. What can we do? Let's open accounts and stuff.
I trust Paulie for the most part. I don't
always
trust bad you. Decision,
always
my
a dig. Always a dig. I trust Paulie for the most
part. I trust Paulie a lot. I don't trust him not to give it to you, though. And I don't
what
trust
am I going
to
do with
I
it?
I don't know.
You don't trust me? I'm trustworthy.
You are trustworthy.
I can't. I can't.
Have you given anyone your Social Security number?
My wife.
You can give, like, your wife.
Over the phone.
You know, I know my kids. And
I don't know my kids.
Do you guys ever, like,
I mean,
your wife might need it, signing you up for something. Hey, I need your Social Security card. Do you ever put it in writing? Or are you? I'm domed out about, like, phone's getting hacked and like, here's my social security number. Like, I'll call and say it over the phone.
No, I don't. I just do it. Just plug it in. Hmm. What will be, will be. That's just how I look at it. I can't worry.
I'm paranoid about that kind of stuff.
I can't. Paranoia and I are not a good combo. It's just not a good combo for me at all. And, you know,
I mean, if someone's just determined to steal my identity,
I'm going
to
deal with the repercussions.
My identity isn't that fun anyway. If you want it, borrow it, go ahead.
What do you get? A couple grand? I mean, enjoy.
You want to pay off my credit cards for me? Thanks.
You're robbing the wrong guy, buddy. If I, you know, if I ever got held up at gunpoint, I'd be like, buddy, I understand times are hard. I'm the wrong guy. I can point you in the direction of some other people that may be more lucrative, but it's not me. I'm not the guy that you want to come after, right? I'm not worth a ton of dough. So
correct.
You know, I give you what's in my wallet. You know, maybe $100, and then whatever's in my ATM. It ain't much, but I won't rat you out. Even I'll just give it to you if you don't hurt me.
So now we have a special relationship, Paulie and I.
Yeah.
He has my social security number. Should I ask for his in return?
No, just I think you're fine.
You know, like hold it as, you know, collateral against mine in the future.
No, I think it's fine. Tom says he's going to need more than 20 years of Ben and Woods, 20 more years. I don't know if I got 20 left in me. Five.
No, we need more than that. I mean, I definitely am not going to be able to retire in 5 years.
I didn't say
I never really planned on retiring anyway. Like, my buddy was my same age that I played golf with. He's already kind of thinking about retirement.
At 48.
Know. Hey, he's got good paying jobs. Yeah. He's good with the stock market. You know, he's investing and doing everything. I'm like, just work until I die.
Yeah, fine, just work until I keel over just in the newsroom or on the air.
I like what I do.
That's a good radio bit. Dying on the air is phenomenal. Phenomenal. The only problem is you can't really tease it.
I'm definitely.
You know? Which it's unteased. Oh, coming up at 8.
Coming up at our 9 o'clock hour.
What's
you
dice?
Won't believe what's going to happen.
We're going to run the live stream or carry him out of there. And it's, the whole thing.
I think
thing.
Of me or you, I'm more likely someday to die on the air.
My stress is through the roof.
That's true.
My blood pressure, my stress.
If it happens soon, it's you.
Yeah.
But like in terms of.
If I make it 10 more years, we're in good shape.
When I'm like 82 and still hosting, you know, whatever.
Doing Boomer Up. Good morning, it's Ben Higgins. Happy birthday to Carl Anthony Towns. See you later. Right? Like
64 today. I remember he was good when I was back in my 40s.
That's right. Like, so I just don't know I can do it, man. Retirement for me will be a breeze. I'll be an easy retired person. Easy. Read, play the guitar, hang out with my kids, play golf. Sleep.
Yeah, you're going to be the starter out at the golf course.
Sit on my ass. Yeah. Do nothing. That's exactly what I'll do. I'm ready now. If I had the money, I would retire now. Today. Today.
Better make sure he doesn't get the money.
That's exactly
right. We need him, Paulie, for a few more years.
Jay Joe goes, you guys in your 60s hosting the round table. So, what did you think of Mike Schilt's bullpen manager?
It'll be the only food I can afford that week. I'll need the round table just to eat.
Ben asking about rap beefs.
Yeah, rap beefs. All right. Listen, man. Well, we only got a couple years left on our contract, so it's not really up to us. It's up to Odyssey, the fine people here, if they would like to keep us. And price is going up. I don't know what to tell you guys. But listen, the lineup is out. I have not seen it. Does anybody have access to it? Because I looked at the Padres Twitter, it wasn't out, but somebody said it's out, so I'd love to hear
we've got let me pull it up here. Dylan Cease versus Hayden was nasty. Luis Arraez leading off.
Okay.
DH. Tatis in right field, Cronenworth at third, Manny Machado in the cleanup at third base.
Good.
Profar in left, Bogey at second, Merrill in center, Campusano behind the dish, and Kim batting ninth at shortstop.
That is your.
I think
your,
we call that the best lineup.
That's your A lineup right there. Your
with
A.
Dylan Cease on the mound, that's your going for a series win.
Yep.
Want to take that season series against the Cubs. Remember, I mean, I know it's very early, and the Cubs right now are playing really well, but if you end up in a wild card battle,
yep,
the tiebreaker in the wild card is head-to-head.
Correct.
And, it could have come into play against the Arizona Diamondbacks very easily last year. You want to win this game and have the tiebreaker against the Cubs just in case you're coming down the stretch and, you know, you're a game ahead of the Cubs, a game behind the Cubs. That tiebreaker could be huge in September. And you don't get it unless you win the game today. So in terms of, you know, potential future implications, probably the most important game the Padres have played this season so far.
Yeah, many are calling it a must win. I am one of those. This is your A lineup. The other thing I like is I like Manny Machado playing third base. It makes a rough night at the plate for Manny easier to stomach, or if he has a rough day at the plate today, it makes it easier to stomach because of what he contributes defensively. When he's your designated hitter and takes the over with three Ks, that's a tough one. That's a very, very tough one to stomach last night. And I know he's probably not very happy with how last night's results were. Had a couple of chances to break the game open, really, and wasn't able to come through. So, yeah, he's got to play better. You know, Xander moved down, to the six now? You know, maybe that does something. I don't know. He's hit the ball a little bit last night, notwithstanding. But, yeah, Xander, Manny, Tatis, those guys got to get this thing cranked up.
Now, I was a little worried after Manny got the full day off on Monday, then back to the DH. I was going, is that a bad sign that his arm's not recovering that well, his elbow, you know, day to day? But good to see him back at third base today. Just gives you a little more confidence out there. Now you got to get the bat going at some point here again.
And let's be honest,
he was hot for a while.
Like the. This game's big to win because, yeah, you want that tiebreak against the Cubs, Ben. You win the series. That's the other most important thing. You win the series here. But then you got three against the Dodgers. Then you got three against the Rockies. Then you've got four against Atlanta, Cincinnati, the Yankees. Gets a little easier with the Marlins. Then Kansas City. Then the Angels. You get a little bit of an easier stretch there for about 10 days. But, man, it's going to continue to stay very, very challenging for the San Diego Padres, and they keep hanging around 500, not really found a way to make that move to 2 to 3 to 4 games over 500, and it's not going to get any easier with the Dodgers coming to town. So this is a big one. This is a big one. You get the off day, reset everybody, and then play your very best and your very hardest against the best team in baseball right now, the LA Dodgers.
Do not want to go any further, since we had a very busy first couple of hours, without at least making mention of Randy Vasquez and the job he did yesterday. 4 1/3 innings, 5 hits, 1 earned run on the home run by Cody Bellinger. 6 strikeouts and also, you know, Adrian Morejon and Steven Kolek coming in behind him and going up against a tough pitcher with Joe Musgrove out, and you're kind of bullpen daying it to give your team a chance to win that game. I was very impressed
that was awesome.
With Randy Vasquez yesterday.
Yeah, man. Struck out 6, you know, got some swing and miss. 83 pitches, 60 of them for strikes. That was really, really encouraging appearance for him. And Morejon got 5 outs for you. You know, like you said, Kolek with the scoreless inning. Yuki Matsui right now is coming back down to earth a little bit. And you do wonder if you're Mike Schilt, how do you assess and reassess what's happening? And it's just not landing for him right now. The control isn't there, and he had been so efficient to this point that it's a little bit kind of tough to stomach.
I mean, for me, Vasquez has been especially effective against right-handers. He pitched out of the bullpen for the Yankees some. Is he a better option, perhaps, as a reliever, when obviously you've been a little thin out there, and he's got good swing and miss stuff? He got a lot of whiff yesterday. That's the kind of stuff you want to see out of a reliever. Adrian Morejon continues to, you know, make the progress forward. He's been a starter. Is it time for him to get a chance in the starting rotation again and see what he can do? You know, you always dreamed on Adrian Morejon.
Yes.
Being that guy, being the, you know, one of your top 3 or 4 starters in the rotation, and just decided, I guess it's never going to happen, and stop trying to make Adrian Morejon into a thing. And then we finally basically gave up on him.
We pretty much
this
did.
Spring and go, so long, Adrian, you know, happy trails, and they didn't get rid of him. And now it's like, okay, this is the Adrian Morejon we've been waiting on. Is it time for him to get an opportunity in the starting rotation? You know, Joe is going to miss one more start at least. Vasquez certainly didn't do anything to lose that opportunity. I imagine you'll see a Vasquez-Morejon combination again, you know, in 5 days when he gets another chance to fill in for Joe. But after that, if there's another spot in the rotation, if Waldron, you know, continues to scuffle, is that a Morejon spot going forward? I wonder if we want to see that.
I'm down to try anything. And again, the stuff, it plays so well. And they've been, the guys at Mad Friars have told me for years, he's a starting pitcher. That's what he should be doing. And again, they're not claiming to know anything more than AJ Preller. It's just that's where he's probably going to be most effective. And I think Eno Sarah says the same thing. Big, big Adrian Morihone fan. Yeah, at this point, Benny, I got to think all options are on the table as it pertains to him and Brito and Vasquez and all these guys. You got to start figuring out what they're going to be and letting them, you know, have that opportunity to go out and do it. So I've been really impressed with Adrian this year. I'll be honest. I had 100% completely given up on him and said, hey, man, you know, time to ask or get off the pot, buddy. And, you know, he's doing the job right now.
All right, we're going to take a timeout. We got Brett Boone coming up at the bottom of the hour. If you want to join us in our next segment, we had a big strategy about, or a big discussion about Mike Schilt's strategies and pulling Jurickson and Profar. Talked about it with AJ as well. If you've got some thoughts, you can join us, 833-288-0973. Also, if you missed the Incorporator and why Jesse barely snuck it in last night, but he ended up sneaking it in a glorious way. We'll get to that as well. Coming up next after a check of traffic with Ben Woods on 97.3 The Fan. Has the pendulum swung too far in the other direction? Welcome back. It's Ben Woods. Brett Boone going to join us in our next segment. And I say that, Woods, in any sport, when you change managers, head coaches in football, basketball, you tend to go toward like the opposite of the coach you just had. Something wasn't working well, so hey, let's get a different personality. You had a fiery guy, maybe you need more of a calm leader. You've got a, you know, a strategic guy, maybe you go with more of an emotional, you know, head coach or manager the next time around. And Mike Schilt's definitely been different than Bob Melvin.
Oh, yeah.
And I just got a tweet in from LOL, says, Schilt has been over-managing since the start of the season, constantly swapping the trio at third. It's why they've been under 500, in my opinion. Hasn't found a consistent lineup. He just tinkers just about every day. I don't know that I agree with that, but one of the knocks on Bob Melvin was he was a bit of an under-manager. Sleepy Bob, people would call him, like, aren't you going to do anything about it? You just nothing, just every day.
Yeah, they're getting worn out by that in San Francisco right now. People are sending me his post game pressers, and I will admit, as much as I like Bob Melvin, it is giving me a little bit of PTSD.
Mike Schilt's very active in his changes during the game, double switches, or you know, defensive replacements. We saw it again with Jurickson and Profar. Is it doing too much? Is there such a thing as doing too much?
So, I mean, to address that tweet. Rotating guys in and out of third base was because of necessity, and it's because of matchups. It's righty lefty, and that's, you know that. And it was because Manny Machado's elbow was injured. So if Manny Machado was healthy to start the season, there would be no moving guys. Tyler Wade wasn't going to get much action at third base. Neither was Graham Pauly, neither was Donovan Solano, or anybody else that they've run out there. So it's really been to make sure Manny could get healthy and play third base as much as he can. So that answers that question. As far as the lineup tinkering goes, I mean, we have this conversation every year. Dave Roberts tinkers his lineup, you know, Bruce Bochy tinkers his lineup. They all do. This is baseball now. There is a bit more load management in the game of baseball than there used to be, certainly. You know, there are guys that are going to go out and post for 160 games, Ben, but it's just getting more rare. You pay a guy $30 million, $25 million. You have the ability, and there are games where you want to get them off their feet, reset their head, you know, whatever it may be. Everybody needs a day off from time to time. Baseball players are certainly not exclusive to that. So that you're going to see that. If you continue to follow baseball from today and beyond, like that's just going to happen. The line, guys are going to slide up spots. They're going to slide down spots depending on the matchup of the day, depending on, you know, how they're feeling, how they're hitting. You know, you've seen Ha-Sun Kim in about four different spots this year. If Kim was hitting 340 right now with power and driving the ball to the gaps, he wouldn't be in the nine hole today. So it, you move things around on the, given the information that you have. So I as far as overmanaging in that sense, no, that's what every manager in the year 2024 does. Overmanaging by taking Jurickson Profar out for a defensive replacement, yeah, that's a bit of overmanaging.
Let's get a couple phone calls in here, 833-288-0973. Let's go to Robert. Good morning, Robert. Welcome to Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
Hey, guys. Happy getaway day.
Yes,
you
buddy.
Too.
I like our manager, and I'm just saying he knows the team we don't.
Yeah.
So he must know something inside that we don't, you know. But so far, I like all of his decision making.
Yeah, I mean, look, no manager is going to go. How many moves do you make in a 162 game season? I mean, it's staggering.
Thousands
and thousands. No manager, let's call it 5,000. No manager is going to go 5,000 for 5,000. Every move he makes is the right move, the right button. But yeah, I mean, you can pick apart things like last night. And I think, you know, we're going to ask him about it Friday. You know, do you think that you're going to continue to do that? If so, why?
Ultimately, you can't even really evaluate on the results sometimes. Last night, for instance, would I have rather had Jurickson and Profar up in the ninth inning with two runners on than Jackson Merrill? Yes. Does that mean Jurickson and Profar would have come through?
No.
No. He could have struck out, could have hit a scorching line drive right at someone, could have hit a dribbler, could have done a lot of things. Jackson Merrill could have come through. Sometimes you play the wrong percentage, it works out in baseball. Sometimes you play the right percentage, it doesn't work out in baseball. Had he gone with a different pitcher than Aniel De Los Santos in the ninth with the Padres have won? Everyone says, you know, if they had just gotten through if Yuki Matsui hadn't given up that run, well, then you bring in Suarez. But there's no guarantee that Suarez would have held the 2-1 lead in the ninth. You know, he's not gonna be perfect all season long. So you can't even really evaluate the choices the manager makes because you don't know what the other choice would have resulted in. Many times, no matter what the manager does, they're going to lose. And sometimes, no matter what the manager does, you're going to win. That's part of baseball as well. So it's impossible to just assign a stat and go, oh, yeah, Mike Schilt was right 68% of the time. You'll never know the correct answer to that question.
Sometimes when you win, you really lose. And sometimes when you lose, you really win. And sometimes when you win or lose, you actually tie. And sometimes when you tie, you actually win or lose. Winning or losing is all one organic mechanism from which one extracts what one needs. I tweeted that last
night. Tony liked that.
Tony liked it. The amount of people in my replies that thought I was eating mushrooms on a Tuesday night was staggering. Guys, that's from...
And sometimes when you tie, you actually win or lose.
That's from White Men Can't Jump.
I hate it when you talk like that.
Yeah. People are like, Woodsy, what is wrong with you? Are you okay? And I said, yeah, just tweeting out a line that actually works in a game like that. It really did, because there were positives in last night's loss. You know, Randy Vasquez being one of them, Jurickson Profar being one of them, you know, Stephen Kolek being one of them, Adrian Morejon being another. So, listen, it's a game I did not expect to win. I sure wanted to, though, once we took the lead. I really did, and it was nail-biting time. It was nail-biting time.
I mean, had they just ended up losing 1-0, we all would have shrugged. Good. Good job by the pitching staff keeping it close. Yeah. I guess Imanaga just is that good. But after Profar hit the home run, it just changed our entire perspective. You have to then win that game. You got the lead in the eighth inning. You don't ever want to see those get away. Even though, of course, every team's going to lose some of those over the course of the season.
Is it Woods? You okay, man? That was not a normal reaction. Blink twice if you need help. I'm fine. It's staggering the amount of people that didn't know what that was from.
I think even I knew that one at this point. I'm not great on some of your movie references.
I think you're a drop of acid away from becoming Dr. Seuss.
Sometimes when you win, you really lose. And sometimes when you lose, you really win.
That's right.
And sometimes when you win or lose, you actually tie. And sometimes when you tie, you actually win or lose.
That's right. It's very, very deep. Think about it for the rest of the day.
All right, it's Ben and the Lorax here with you on 97.3 The Fan. Brett Boone will join us next. Don't go away. As you may or may not be aware, the Dodgers are coming to town this Friday through Sunday. Let's turn out, support the Padres, create a true home field advantage. Limited tickets are available for all three Dodger games at Padres.com/tickets. I am also authorized to let you know that tomorrow, I believe, we will be giving away tickets to the Padres-Dodgers series. Correct, Paulie?
Friday's game.
Listen tomorrow, not just our show, but all day long, for the opportunity to win Friday Padres-Dodgers tickets.
I believe tomorrow we will give away Friday night tickets. Annie and Elston will give away Saturday tickets, and Gwen and Chris will give away Sunday tickets. I believe that is how it's working.
I like it. I like it a lot. A hot ticket, as they say.
It is always a hot ticket. All right, we're going to check traffic. Brett Boone is standing by. Always enjoy our conversations with Booney. You talked to Pete Rose this week. How about that? That's coming up next here on 97.3 The Fan. Hey, we're joined right now by Odyssey MLB insider Brett Boone. Insider calls are presented by Grainger. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Brett, also the host of the Brett Boone podcast, featuring the most notable names in MLB and around sports every week. And we welcome Brett Boone back to Ben and Woods. Booney, good morning.
Good morning, boys.
Good to talk to you, my friend.
So, I mean, you were only on the Padres for one
season.
Yeah, he's back. You were only on the Padres for one season, but your family's from San Diego. Dodgers coming to town this season. Were you brought up like Dodgers haters in San Diego, or being an MLB family, you can't really take too many sides when it comes to that?
Yeah, I stood a little bit above the fray. No, that I was never privy to that because, I mean, I was born in San Diego. But I grew up back east.
Yeah.
My dad playing for the Phillies. But back then, man, the Dodgers were, you know, those were the days of Say and Garvey and Lopes and who's the shortstop? Give me the shortstop. Come on.
Who's the shortstop?
Yes.
Sacked. No, he was second base.
Second base. That was
No. That was Russell.
Oh, you know, Bill Russell.
Before, that's what I said.
Bill Russell, yeah.
Yeah.
Russell.
That was my childhood. I remember those Dodger-Philly rivalries. So, no, I really wasn't. And when my 1 year with the Padres, it was 2000. And, yes, it was, you know, it was a rivalry, the Padres and the Dodgers, but not really because we were in the basement and it was a different time. We didn't win too many games my year in San Diego in 2000. But, nevertheless, I enjoyed the weather.
It's so funny. The golf courses, I'm sure. It's so funny too. Like growing up in the family that you did, the allegiances that you have for a short time. It's a different level of fandom, right? Like, oh, we love the Phillies, and oh, we love the Reds, and oh, now we love the Mariners, and now you know your kid goes to USC, right?
He
did.
My son went to Princeton. My daughter went to USC.
Yeah, now you're a big Princeton fan. You know, as much as I loathe USC, if my kid gets a full ride to USC, fight on, man. I will be there front row. Like, it's just so funny how it works.
Without a doubt. And we still have it to this day because Aaron went to SC. I went to SC. Savannah, my daughter, went to SC. My dad is a Stanford Cardinal. So now you've got, you know, when I was at SC, Dad was kind of, yeah, fight on. I hate that song. Or this and that. I'm like, Dad, whatever. You know, you take college too serious. Then Jake goes to Princeton, you know, but Dad was always the intellect. You know, you're the Stanford grad.
Yep.
And now all of a sudden Jake goes to Princeton and kind of one-ups him. So now they have intellectual they've got their intellectual conversations going on at Thanksgiving where me and Aaron are the two SC dropouts. You know, we signed our junior year, so we stay out of that conversation. We let them argue, but it's cool. And it's a lot of fun, but I still, to this day, when the Stanford plays SC, Dad still, he'll give me a call. Yeah. You think Cardinals are going to beat them today? You know, come on, Dad. It's SC. And at the end of the day, I really don't care. And he's like, but he cares more than me. Aaron Boone? Now, Aaron Boone cares. SC, he'll be playing the fight song. He's got his,
the whole
he's got
thing.
His SC jersey on. He embarrasses the family. He'll paint his face if need be.
Amazing.
So, whereas me, I'm the casual observer. Of course, I want SC to win, but at the end of the day, I don't really give a rip. Let's be honest. What have they done for me lately?
That's true.
No, that's not true. That's not true. They take good care of me when I go up there. They give me sideline passes. SC, come on.
Very unaffected. That's our buddy. Brett Boone joins us here. So you got to tell us, fill us in and the audience on your conversation with Pete Rose. And you know, I've seen a lot of comparisons to Tony Gwynn when they're talking about Luis Arraez. Obviously, mm-hmm. They're now, you know, both Padres at one point in their career. Tony here his entire career. But Pete Rose is another guy that the bat-to-ball skills were absolutely outstanding and a very, 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 very difficult guy to get out. How did that convo go?
That was great, you know, because I've been wanting to get Pete on for a while, and he's 83 now, but he's sharp as a tack. And, I mean, the thing that fascinates me about Pete is I grew up with him. You know, Dad and him were teammates. So I spent a lot of time with Pete as a kid. And I never had favorite players. You know, you always ask, who's your favorite player growing up? Well, in the lifestyle I grew up in, all my dad's teammates were my favorite player. One day it could be Bull, and the next day it's Schmitty, and the next day I'm painting Manny Trio's glove, and Manny's my favorite player. So I never had a favorite player, but I always admired the way Pete went about it. When the national anthem ended, for the next 3 hours, if you were to tell a kid, how do you play the game of baseball once that game starts, look at Pete Rose. He was unbelievable. The stories I heard through the years, I remember my dad, and Pete was noted for never giving up an at-bat. Most of us get four hits in a game. We're celebrating for a week. Pete, no, I got to get five now that I got four. I remember a story my dad told me. Pete was going through a messy divorce in Philadelphia in the late 70s. And my dad was like, Pete, you know, how do you do it? Back then, we didn't have social media. It was just newspaper and TV. But he said Pete was on the cover of the sports page every day about this messy divorce he's going through. And he said he went up to Pete one day during BP, and he said, Pete, how do you do it? Because he was raking. He goes, how do you come to the ballpark and get two hits every night when you're going through all this messy divorce? And he said, Bobby, it's a hell of a lot easier going 2-for-4 than 0-for-4 dealing with this shit. And that was Pete Rose. Sorry about the shit.
Oh, you're all right. The double. It's all right. We had Goose Gossett, you know, John. We're fine.
That's the type of player he was. And it was cool catching up with him. He touched on the Ohtani situation and what's gone on here in recent times. Touched on his own situation. He was very apologetic about it, but I didn't see he's at a point in his life where it's not like, oh, please let me back in. It's kind of like, you know, maybe I'll get in one day, probably when I've passed away, I'm long gone. But I think he's come to grips with it at this stage of his life. It's probably not going to happen in his lifetime. And, you know, he owned up to his stuff. We didn't talk about it that much, but definitely touched on it. Touched on Ohtani a little bit. But what I was interested in, the viewers, the listeners to hear, was just Pete Rose, the inside, what makes him tick, and just rattling off numbers. And he'd go back to the Koufax days, and then he'd go to the Big Red Machine, and then he'd go to the current day and talk about the players today. So it's really interesting. It was a fascinating interview. And I always love talking with Pete. You know, we share a little few stories about me sleeping at his house the night before they had the World Series parade in Philadelphia, and what happened that morning. It's actually pretty funny. You got to listen. But other than that, no, it was good catching up with Pete, and Pete's still Pete.
Insider Calls brought to you by Grainger, for the ones who get it done. Grainger offers professional-grade supplies and solutions made for every industry and backed by product experts. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Now that you're a media professional, you know, we can't really allow the cursing. That's one of the things that you, as a media professional.
He's just a podcast guy, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's still authentic.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Hey, Paulie, tell him, Paulie.
You know, I agree with you. You know, watching Pete Rose play, it's so hard to separate Pete, all the off-the-field stuff, and how long he just denied what was so obviously true, that he was betting on the games when he shouldn't have been betting on them. I feel like if he had just come clean, you know, at the start, it could have been over decades ago. And you were on the Reds when it was still pretty fresh in everybody's mind. What, he was suspended in 1989. You were on the Reds 94 to 98. I'm sure it was still a huge topic in Cincinnati back then.
And let me be clear on it. I'm a huge Pete Rose, the baseball player, fan.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah.
But I still wrestle with it in my mind. You know, I know there's the guys out there, hey, it's been long enough, let him in the Hall of Fame. And then there's the guys on the other side of the ledger, like, no, he broke the coveted rule, the rule. I'm still kind of on the fence about it. I mean, I'm a pretty forgiving guy. I don't really worry too much about other people, and I'll get into other people's business. But when it comes to betting on baseball, on your profession, you know, I'm a gambler. I love going to Las Vegas. I'll make a football pick without a doubt. I love the Masters pools. So I'm not going to sit here and act like, oh, I've never bet on it. Of course, I would never consider, and nor have I met any teammates or colleagues or guys I played against that would ever consider betting on the game of baseball, which they play for a living. So I'm still on the fence, and as big a fan as I am of Pete the ball player, I still have my I still have my druthers about, man, if you break that rule, should you be allowed in? I'm still kind of on the fence about it, because it is the one rule that is kind of holy.
It's so crazy. I mean, we talk about it a lot on this show. The art, separating the art from the artist, Booney, is, I mean, if you want to just look at art, one of the best painters to ever do it is Pete Rose, period, the end. And, yeah, you're right, man. When you watch how he ran the bases, when you watch how, like, Pete Rose was never going to slide into third, stand up and give the, you know, Ron Say a hug, you know, after he, hey, how you doing, pal? It's, bro, we'll have a beer after the game. We'll have a beer in the off season and go hunting and fishing, but we're not friends right now. It's a different era. He's from a different era. He was the era. Yeah, we talk about it a lot. I'm with you, man. I have a lot of people like that. The art from the artist is a tough thing to separate.
Yeah. Without a doubt.
He's great. And do you get the sense from him? Because we, you know, we interview a lot of ex-ball players on this show. We spend time with you guys at Fantasy Camp. Do you get the sense that he likes the game of baseball still?
I think he does. I think, of course, like most of us, we're pretty partial to our generation.
Sure.
But this game, if you don't move with this game's going to run you over. You know, I came to the conclusion a long time ago. Because when I first started getting on the media side, it was a kind of, you know, I'd compare everything to my generation. And I thought, no, you've got to roll with the game. And as the game expands, you've got to expand your mind or this game will run you over. It'll leave you in the background. So the get off my lawn and my generation was better. That's all well and good. And you can have that personal feeling, but you've got to evolve with the game. And I think there's a lot of positive things happening in the game that I really like, that I'm envious about, that I didn't have in my generation. But I roll with the game, and it is what it is. Yeah, I can parse and say, hey, I don't like that, but I do like that. You know, I don't like that. You got to roll with the game. I think Pete does his best job to roll with the game, but I'm finding it, especially in that older generation, my dad's generation. You know, my dad's 76 now. Pete's 83. I remember my grandpa right at the end before he passed away. Man, he loved this game of baseball. But boy, was he partial to his generation. And he'd always look at me and go, yeah, back in my day, Feller would have done this and that. I go, hey, Gramps, Randy Johnson's pretty good. He ain't like Feller. I'd be like, Gramps, this Tony Gwynn guy can really hit Ted Williams and chew him up. And, you know, that's just the way they are.
I love it.
To that age, it's beautiful to hear the stories. But you get to that age and you're kind of locked in. And I can tell that, yeah, Pete's evolving with the game. He talks the game today. But, man, he really loves his generation and the way the game used to be played. But, yeah, he's moving on as well as he can. But I find when you get to a certain age in life, and Pete, you know, like me, I'm 55. I've seen my generation. I saw my childhood generation. I'm currently watching this current generation. I don't have as much experience as Pete does, who saw his generation, the generation before is the generation X, and now – three generations after his, so he's got a lot. He's got a lot more life experience. So I find it's really tough for the older generation to really embrace this current. They try. They put a good face on, but you can tell when he's talking. Man, he loves how the game was played when he played.
Booney, last week you told an amazing story about Pedro Martinez. We shared it with Woods the next day when he came back. I got a couple minutes. I'm going to put you on the baseball story spot again. So yesterday, Wilson Contreras of the Cardinals broke his left forearm when he was hit by a bat. Right. It was gruesome sounding.
Gnarly.
I mean, just, oh, what a horrible sound. What was the worst baseball injury you witnessed in person as a big leaguer? Or not as a big leaguer?
I saw two. One was, let me think. Right-hander for the Seattle Mariner. Brad Holman was his name.
Okay.
Brian Holman was his brother. I came up with Brad, came up years later. We're in Texas, line drive. I can't remember the hitter. Hit him right in the forehead.
Off the bat.
And he goes straight down. I run in from second base and he's out cold. And it looks like there's a bullet hole and there's blood coming out of his forehead. And I seriously thought for a minute, I wasn't in shock, but I was kind of like, I think he's dead.
Oh.
Like, man, not in a funny way. Like, no. I really think he might be dead. And now he came to, you know, ended up coming out completely recovering, never recovered probably for his baseball career. That was one of the most gruesome, but the nastiest thing I've ever seen is the left-hander. He passed away recently. He was a teammate of mine, Tom Browning, when he broke his arm pitching. It just snapped in half. Oh. So those are the two biggest injuries. One of the saddest days I've ever had was 1996. I was on the disabled list to start the season.
As you may or may not be aware, the Dodgers are coming to town this Friday through Sunday. Let's turn out, support the Padres, create a true home field advantage. Limited tickets are available for all three Dodger games at Padres.com/tickets. I am also authorized to let you know that tomorrow, I believe, we will be giving away tickets to the Padres-Dodgers
yes.
series. Correct, Paulie?
To Friday's game.
Listen tomorrow, not just our show, but all day long, for the opportunity to win Friday Padres-Dodgers tickets.
I believe tomorrow we will give away Friday night tickets. Annie and Elston will give away Saturday tickets, and Gwen and Chris will give away Sunday tickets. I believe that is how it's working.
I like it. I like it a lot. It's a hot ticket, as they say.
It is always a hot ticket. All right, we're going to check traffic. Brett Boone is standing by. Always enjoy our conversations with Booney. He talked to Pete Rose this week. How about that? That's coming up next here on 97.3 The Fan. Yeah, we're joined right now by Odyssey MLB insider Brett Boone. Insider calls are presented by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Brett, also the host of the Brett Boone podcast, featuring the most notable names in MLB and around sports every week. And we welcome Brett Boone back to Ben and Woods. Booney, good morning.
Good morning, boys.
Good to talk to you, my friend.
So, you were only on the Padres for one
season.
Yeah, he's back. You were only on the Padres for one season, but your family's from San Diego. Dodgers coming to town this season. Were you brought up like Dodgers haters in San Diego, or being an MLB family, you can't really take too many sides when it comes to that?
Yeah, I stood a little bit above the fray. No, I was never privy to that because, I mean, I was born in San Diego. But I grew up back east.
Yeah.
My dad playing for the Phillies. But back then, man, the Dodgers were, you know, those were the days of Say and Garvey and Lopes and who's the shortstop? Give me the shortstop. Come on.
Who's the shortstop?
Yes.
Sacked. No, he was second base.
That was
No. I'm talking Russell.
Oh,
you know,
Bill Russell.
That's what I said.
Bill Russell, yeah.
Russell.
That was my childhood. I remember those Dodger-Philly rivalries. So, no, I really wasn't. And when my 1 year with the Padres, it was 2000. And, yes, it was, you know, it was a rivalry, the Padres and the Dodgers, but not really because we were in the basement and it was a different time. We didn't win too many games my year in San Diego in 2000. But, nevertheless, I enjoyed the weather.
It's so funny. The golf courses, I'm sure. It's so funny too. Like growing up in the family that you did, the allegiances that you have for a short time. It's a different level of fandom, right? Like, oh, we love the Phillies, and oh, we love the Reds, and oh, now we love the Mariners, and now you know your kid goes to USC, right?
He did. My son went to Princeton. My daughter went to USC.
Yeah, now you're a big Princeton fan. You know, as much as I loathe USC, if my kid gets a full ride to USC, fight on, man. I will be there front row. Like, it's just so funny how it works.
Without a doubt. And we still have it to this day because Aaron went to SC. I went to SC. Savannah, my daughter, went to SC. My dad is a Stanford Cardinal. So now you've got, you know, when I was at SC, Dad was kind of, yeah, fight on. I hate that song. Or this and that. I'm like, Dad, whatever. You know, you take college too serious. Then Jake goes to Princeton, you know, but Dad was always the intellect. You know, you're the Stanford grad.
Yep.
And now all of a sudden Jake goes to Princeton and kind of one-ups him. So now they have intellectual they've got their intellectual conversations going on at Thanksgiving where me and Aaron are the two SC dropouts. You know, we signed our junior year, so we stay out of that conversation. We let them argue, but it's cool. And it's a lot of fun, but I still, to this day, when the Stanford plays SC, Dad still, he'll give me a call. Yeah. You think Cardinals are going to beat them today? You know, come on, Dad. It's SC. And at the end of the day, I really don't care. And he's like, but he cares more than me. Aaron Boone? Now, Aaron Boone cares. SC, he'll be playing the fight song. He's got his,
the whole
he's got
thing.
His SC jersey on. He embarrasses the family. He'll paint his face if need be.
Amazing.
So, whereas me, I'm the casual observer. Of course, I want SC to win, but at the end of the day, I don't really give a rip. Let's be honest. What have they done for me lately?
That's true.
No, that's not true. That's not true. They take good care of me when I go up there. They give me sideline passes. SC, come on.
Very unaffected. That's our buddy. Brett Boone joins us here. So you got to tell us, fill us in and the audience on your conversation with Pete Rose. And you know, I've seen a lot of comparisons to the to Tony Gwynn when they're talking about Luis Arraez. Obviously, they're now, you know, both Padres. At one point in their career, Tony here his entire career, but Pete Rose is another guy that the bat-to-ball skills were absolutely outstanding and a very, 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 very difficult guy to get out. How did that convo go?
That was great, you know, because I've been wanting to get Pete on for a while, and he's 83 now, but he's sharp as a tack. And, I mean, the thing that fascinates me about Pete is I grew up with him. You know, Dad and him were teammates. I spent a lot of time with Pete as a kid. And I never had favorite players. You know, you always ask, who's your favorite player growing up? Well, in the lifestyle I grew up in, all my dad's teammates were my favorite player. One day it could be Bull, and the next day it's Schmitty, and the next day I'm painting Manny Trio's glove, and Manny's my favorite player. So I never had a favorite player, but I always admired the way Pete went about it. When the national anthem ended, for the next 3 hours, if you were to tell a kid, how do you play the game of baseball once that game starts? Look at Pete Rose. He was unbelievable. The stories I heard through the years, I remember my dad, and Pete was noted for never giving up an at-bat. Most of us get four hits in a game. We're celebrating for a week. Pete, no, I got to get five now that I got four. I remember a story my dad told me. Pete was going through a messy divorce in Philadelphia in the late 70s. And my dad was like, Pete, you know, how do you do it? Back then, we didn't have social media. It was just newspaper and TV. But he said Pete was on the cover of the, you know, sports page every day about this messy divorce he's going through. And he said he went up to Pete one day during BP, and he said, Pete, how do you do it? Because he was raking. He goes, how do you come to the ballpark and get two hits every night when you're going through all this messy divorce? And he said, Bobby, it's a hell of a lot easier going 2-for-4 than 0-for-4 dealing with this shit. And that was Pete Rose. Sorry about the shit.
Oh, you're right. The double. That's all right. We had Goose Gossett, you know, John. We're fine.
That's the type of player he was. And it was cool catching up with him. He touched on the Ohtani situation and what's gone on here in recent times. Touched on his own situation. He was very apologetic about it, but I didn't see he's at a point in his life where it's not like, oh, please let me back in. It's kind of like, you know, maybe I'll get in one day, probably when I've passed away, I'm long gone. But I think he's come to grips with it at this stage of his life. It's probably not going to happen in his lifetime. And, you know, he owned up to his stuff. We didn't talk about it that much, but definitely touched on it. Touched on Ohtani a little bit. But what I was interested in the viewers, the listeners to hear, was just Pete Rose, the inside, what makes him tick, and just rattling off numbers. And he'd go back to the Koufax days, and then he'd go to the Big Red Machine, and then he'd go to the current day and talk about the players today. So it's really interesting. It was a fascinating interview, and I always love talking with Pete. You know, we share a little few stories about me sleeping at his house the night before they had the World Series parade in Philadelphia, and what happened that morning. It's actually pretty funny. You got to listen. But other than that, no, it was good catching up with Pete, and Pete's still Pete.
Insider Calls brought to you by Grainger for the ones who get it done. Grainger offers professional-grade supplies and solutions made for every industry and backed by product experts. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Now that you're a media professional, you know, we can't really allow the cursing. That's one of the things that you as a media professional.
He's just a podcast guy, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's still authentic.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Hey, Paulie, tell him, Paulie.
You know, I agree with you. You know, watching Pete Rose play, it's so hard to separate Pete, all the off the field stuff, and how long he just denied what was so obviously true, that he was betting on the games when he shouldn't have been betting on them. I feel like if he had just come clean, you know, at the start, it could have been over decades ago. And you were on the Reds when it was still pretty fresh in everybody's mind. What, he was suspended in 1989. You were on the Reds 1994 to 1998. I'm sure it was still a huge topic in Cincinnati back then.
And let me be clear on it. I'm a huge Pete Rose, the baseball player, fan.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah.
But I still wrestle with it in my mind. You know, I know there's the guys out there, hey, it's been long enough, let him in the Hall of Fame. And then there's the guys on the other side of the ledger, like, no, he broke the coveted rule, the rule. I'm still kind of on the fence about it. I mean, yeah, I'm a pretty forgiving guy. I don't really worry too much about other people, and I'll get into other people's business. But when it comes to betting on baseball, on your profession, you know, I'm a gambler. I love going to Las Vegas. I'll make a football pick without a doubt. I love the Masters pools. So I'm not going to sit here and act like, oh, I've never been on it. Of course, I would never consider, and nor have I met any teammates or colleagues or guys I played against that would ever consider betting on the game of baseball, which they play for a living. So I'm still on the fence, and as big a fan as I am of Pete the ball player, I still have my I still have my druthers about, man, if you break that rule, should you be allowed in? I'm still kind of on the fence about it because it is the one rule that is kind of holy.
It's so crazy. I mean, we talk about it a lot on this show. The art, separating the art from the artist, Booney, is, I mean, if you want to just look at art, one of the best painters to ever do it is Pete Rose, period, the end. And, you're right, man. When you watch how he ran the bases, when you watch how, like, Pete Rose was never going to slide into third, stand up and give the, you know, Ron Say a hug, you know, after he, hey, how you doing, pal? It's, bro, we'll have a beer after the game. We'll have a beer in the off season and go hunting and fishing, but we're not friends right now. It's a different era. He's from a different era. He was the era. Yeah, we talk about it a lot. I'm with you, man. I have a lot of people like that. The art from the artist is a tough thing to separate.
Yeah. Without a doubt.
He's great. Do you get the sense from him? Because we interview a lot of ex-ball players on this show. We spend time with you guys at Fantasy Camp. Do you get the sense that he likes the game of baseball still?
I think he does. I think, of course, like most of us, we're pretty partial to our generation.
Sure.
But this game, if you don't move with this game's going to run you over. You know, I came to the conclusion a long time ago. Because when I first started getting on the media side, it was a kind of, you know, I'd compare everything to my generation. And I thought, no, you've got to roll with the game. And as the game expands, you've got to expand your mind or this game will run you over. It'll leave you in the background. So the get off my lawn and my generation was better. That's all well and good. And you can have that personal feeling, but you've got to evolve with the game. And I think there's a lot of positive things happening in the game that I really like, that I'm envious about, that I didn't have in my generation. But I roll with the game, and it is what it is. Yeah, I can parse and say, hey, I don't like that, but I do like that. You know, I don't like that. You got to roll with the game. I think Pete does his best job to roll with the game, but I'm finding it, especially in that older generation, my dad's generation. You know, my dad's 76 now. Pete's 83. I remember my grandpa right at the end before he passed away. Man, he loved this game of baseball. But boy, was he partial to his generation. And he'd always look at me and go, yeah, back in my day, Feller would have done this and that. I go, hey, Gramps, Randy Johnson's pretty good. He ain't like Feller. I'd be like, Gramps, this Tony Gwynn guy can really hit Ken Williams and chew him up. And, you know, that's just the way they are.
I love it.
To that age, it's beautiful to hear the stories. But you get to that age and you're kind of locked in. And I can tell that, yeah, Pete's evolving with the game. He talks the game today. But, man, he really loves his generation and the way the game used to be played. But, yeah, he's moving on as well as he can. But I find when you get to a certain age in life, and Pete, you know, like me, I'm 55. I've seen my generation. I saw my childhood generation. I'm currently watching this current generation. I don't have as much experience as Pete does, who saw his generation, the generation before is the generation X, and now three generations after his. So he's got a lot more life experience. So I find it's really tough for the older generation to really embrace this current. They try, they put a good face on, but you can tell when he's talking, man, he loves how the game was played when he played.
Booney, last week you told an amazing story about Pedro Martinez. We shared it with Woods the next day when he came back. I got a couple minutes. I'm going to put you on the baseball story spot again. So yesterday, Wilson Contreras of the Cardinals broke his left forearm when he was hit by a bat. Right. It was gruesome sounding.
Gnarly.
I mean, just, oh, what a horrible sound. What was the worst baseball injury you witnessed in person as a big leaguer? Or not as a big leaguer?
I saw two. One was, let me think. Right-hander, for the Seattle mayor. Brad Holman was his name.
Okay.
Brian Holman was his brother I came up with. Brad came up years later. We're in Texas. Line drive, I can't remember the hitter. Hit him right in the forehead.
Oh, God.
And he goes straight down. I run in from second base, and he's out cold. And it looks like there's a bullet hole, and there's blood coming out of his forehead. And I seriously thought for a minute. I wasn't in shock, but I was kind of like, I think he's dead.
Oh.
Like, man, not in a funny way. Like, no. I really think he might be dead. And now he came to, ended up coming out completely recovering, never recovered probably for his baseball career. That was one of the most gruesome, but the nastiest thing I've ever seen is the left-hander. He passed away recently. He was a teammate of mine, Tom Browning, when he broke his arm pitching. It just snapped in half. Oh. So those are the two biggest injuries. One of the saddest days I've ever had was 1996. I was on the disabled list to start the season. I had elbow chips, and it was opening day, and I forget the gentleman's name, the umpire that passed away at Riverfront Stadium in Cincinnati. And I wasn't in the game. I remember I was in my jacket. It was a cold day. I think there was snow on the ground. And
John McSherry.
I'm sitting there on the top rail, and, you know, it's just kind of like anything else. He turns around. He starts headed back towards where the ground crew sit behind home plate. They've got a little glass door that opens when they come out and do the field work. And he's just headed back there and kind of motioning to them. I'm thinking, what, do you need a drink, something? And all of a sudden he collapses, and I'm going, what happened? You know, we're all just sitting there as players. Next thing you know, he died. He died right there. We knew right then. They said he was probably dead before he hit the ground. So I've been through some, you know, I've seen some pretty gnarly things. That injury you're talking about the other day, I was just talking about that. J.D. Martinez is probably one of the he's an astute hitter. He studies the game. He really, you know, and it's an overused term in today's game, but really let the ball travel. Well, Martinez really does let the ball travel. He hits it as late as you possibly can. But usually there's a flaw in the system. You hate to see an injury like that. But usually all my games, all the times I went to home plate, all the hard swings I took, I probably kicked the glove twice in my career. So it's really something that if it happens, it's usually the catcher's fault. I heard St. Louis is trying to incorporate it into their catching program, getting closer. Well, you might not want to get that close.
Booney, we'll have to continue this next week because we're out of time,
man.
Great job, as always.
The music's
playing us out.
We love you. We love you.
Great stuff. We'll talk to Booney again soon. We'll be back. Paulie's getting naked for the Roundup Report next.
Oh, God. Oh, God.